The gentleman I'm about to talk to today began playing guitar some 26 years ago at the age of 4. Today, he's spoken of and compared to such legends as Hendrix, Beck, Clapton, Page, and Stevie Ray Vaughan. After 7 solo albums, each one reaching the top 10 in the Billboard Blues chart, and 2 consecutive albums hitting number 1 immediately on their release, my guest, Mr. Joe Bonamassa, has proven without a doubt that he can stand on his own with those guitar slingers. And Mr. Bonamassa will be appearing at Penn's Peak in Jim Thorpe on Saturday, November 17th. So, it's an honor and a pleasure to welcome Mr. Joe Bonamassa to WLVR and Joe's Basement. So, how's Joe doing today?
Joe's doing very well. Not to talk about myself in the third person, but we're in Wichita, Kansas. And we're looking forward to the show coming up in Jim Thorpe. It's going to be great. We're playing with the great Sam Bush as a co-headline, and I think those shows are going to be really good. I'm really looking forward. We start them next week, so I'm really looking forward to it.
We are really looking forward to seeing you again. Tell you what, when I play your songs, I introduce you as the hardest working man in show business. In looking over your current tour, I see 74 days on the road. You're performing 55 shows. My question is, how do you remain focused with such a heavy schedule? I mean, the physical toll on your body alone would bring a lesser man to his knees.
Well, it's hard. I'm lucky. I'm 30 years old and I can do it now. You know, we're doing 75 days out and 55 shows. It's a lot of days. And you know, like the days off are spent, you know, at television stations and radio stations and doing, you know, interviews and stuff like that. But you know, I remember the days, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, where the days off were spent, you know, just doing nothing. And the fact that, you know, there are so many demands on my time right now is actually a good thing. And I never forget, you know, where I came from and you know, how hard I had to work to get here. So the fact that people want to talk to me now is actually a really good thing. And we're like really, you know, I'm just really honored by, you know, people's, you know, really accepting the, you know, the record and everything else. So.
Well, that takes care of my next question. I was going to ask you what a typical day off was like for you. So anyway,
it depends. I try to make a bit of free time, you know, but it's really kind of hard because, you know, free time I have, it's like it used to be I have a whole day, but now it's like I have a couple of hours, you know. And, you know, because I host my own radio show on Sirius Satellite, the Blues Channel on Sirius Satellite Radio. And, you know, I do 5 shows a week, and I'm also doing a monthly column for Guitar, you know, World Magazine. And, you know, so it's like the minute you can't let your guard down too long. And so I have a couple hours here to go to the mall every once in a while, like we did yesterday, and then had to come back and just cut, you know, a week's worth of radio shows. So, but it's been great. You know, I cannot complain at all. The minute I complain is the minute I should quit and let somebody else do this, because it's like I'm really having the time of my life.
Well, it sounds like it, and you know, just you can tell from the enthusiasm in your voice that, you know, you were born to do what you're doing, my friend, and God bless you for it.
Well, thanks. You know, I mean, it's been a long road. I mean, like, you know, since the days of Bloodline, you know, I mean, I've put out, you know, 7 albums and, you know, 2 DVDs, and, you know, I've toured, you know, relentlessly, you know, across the country and the world, and just, you know, trying to build one fan at a time. And it's like, that's definitely been my, you know, key to success, is actually just building one fan at a time and, you know, basically, you know, just going out and shaking hands and looking people in the eye and saying, thanks for coming. You know, it's, you know, they don't have to come to the shows, but they do, and it's been really amazing. So.
Yeah, I realized that. I got to meet you a couple years ago. You played over in New Jersey. Actually, they had a festival that kind of stole the name from, well, the town where I'm from, Bethlehem. It was a festival they called Music Fest. And I believe you started around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, played a blistering set that just left me wanting so much more. You packed up your equipment, and you headed to the West Coast, and you played a second date that day.
Yeah, we went, I think those were back in the days when you had to kind of do the two, you know. I mean, now the festival thing, most of the times we headline them, but back when we had to go, we had to go on at 1 o'clock, it was, you know, the agent would be like, hey, do you want to do another show? And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, why not? We're here. But those days are long gone. I can't, the days of the two shows are over for me. I can't do those anymore. So.
Yeah, well, I can see, you know, like playing, you know, like 2 shows in one day. If, say, like you're in Jersey and then maybe head up to B.B. King's in New York for a show, but going from the East Coast to the West Coast, That's a lot of travel time, my friend.
It is a lot of travel time. We had, you know, like a lot of times, you know, you have a plane, you know, you have to get on a plane and travel, you know, back and forth. And, you know, we're lucky now that we have the bus, and the bus helps a lot. And, it makes it a lot more comfortable for us to be able to go out there and, you know, kind of push ourselves. But, you know, again, it's like, to me, it's like, you know, we're starting to charge, you know, good money for tickets. You know, to me, it's like the most important thing is that those shows are really, you know, that you have enough energy and enough stamina, and you make each show, instead of doing two shows, then well, maybe the second one you're a little bit tired. I would basically save my energy and do one great show and you know, have people talk about that. And I think that's been the key to success for me. So.
Yeah, that's understandable. I remember back when I was growing up, there was a band from England, Uriah Heep. I loved them so much.
They were
supposed to play at Allentown at Central Catholic High School's Rockne Hall. And I traveled 125 miles to see them, and they canceled rather unceremoniously because they had a show to do the next day in New York and they wanted to be sharp. And it was even mentioned in Melody Maker magazine about them having to drop the Allentown show. But
well, you don't really want to cancel shows. You have to kind of stick to what you agree to do. But I think also too, it's like, you know, it takes a toll every day, you know, and it's about taking care of yourself, eating right, you know, not kind of falling into the typical, you know, people think, oh, you know, you have like, you know, you have this thing where it's like, it's one big Mardi Gras, one big party. It's really not. It's a job like everything else.
That's right.
You can't, you know, it's like when you go to work, you know, most people go to work in the morning. They can't just wake up, you know, on a Tuesday, go, well, I'm going to cancel. I'm not going to go into work today because I want to be sharp for Wednesday. I don't think they would be employed too long. So that's, you know, it's the same mentality. So.
That's right. If you don't put out, your audience, in effect, will fire you. They won't buy your material. They won't buy your tickets.
They won't buy your tickets. They won't come to your shows. It's like, so that, to me, is, you know, it's really of the utmost importance. So.
Yes. All right, I'd like to talk a little bit about your current release, Slow Gin, which is still sitting at number one on the Billboard Blues chart. And I see that your previous one, You and I, was it You and I
you
or
me.
You and Me, is not too far behind. Slow Gin.
It's wild to have two of them on the charts at one time. You know, it's like, you know, it's the blues chart's great. You know, but it's also a thing where it's like you have this situation where it's like to be number one on the blues chart, to be number one on the regular Billboard Top 200. The difference in album sales is pretty wide.
Yeah.
But the fact that we've been able to come out on August 25th. Released the record, and basically, with the exception of the great Betty Levitt for 1 week, we've run the gamut for the entire fall, and have been number one for, you know, 10 out of 11 weeks. That to me is like, and the fact that each week our sales have gone up, you know, is a real testament to, like, you know, my fans, and I think this testament that I think the fans are, you know, liking the album so much so that they've told other people and they're buying the record. So it's like. It's very strange to have this, you know, kind of like momentum, because it's just I've never had it before, you know, and I've never had such name recognition in the sense that it used to be Joe Bonna who,
you know,
and it's like still, you know, it's still, you got to, like, you know, if somebody asked me outside my bus today, they were like, you know, who's in the bus? And I was like, a guy named Joe Bonamassa. He's like, Bonna what? And I was like, that's exactly, I go, exactly.
Well,
if you don't get it the first time, then you don't know me, right? If I, you know, have to spell it out phonetically, I'm like, that's a weird thing about me. It's like, there's people who really know me to the point where, like, oh yeah, Joe Bonamassa, or there's people who don't know me at all. There's no middle ground. You never hear somebody go, well, I think I've heard of him. You know, it's like,
yes.
It's either they really are big fans, or they have no clue of my existence at all. And it's kind of fun, so I like that.
Yeah, it's not a last name that after you hear it, you forget it right away.
No, or it's, yeah, it's not a last name. It's like in the vernacular. It's like if Joe Smith, maybe
yes.
I would have been bigger earlier, but it's okay.
Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about Slow Gin.
Mm-hmm.
You were originally going to release that as an all-acoustic release. What happened to change your mind on that?
You know what? The momentum of You and Me, you know, it was still on the charts. It was still like number two, or, you know, like a year later, we're still, you know, the record, You and Me, was still number two on the charts, on the Billboard Blues charts. And I was like, you know, so many new people have heard of me from this You and Me record. I can't assume that they have my entire back catalog. So an acoustic album would make sense, You know what I'm saying? It's, yeah. Like, it's like everybody has heard me and I sold millions of records, then an acoustic record would make sense because people would go, oh, okay, he's doing an acoustic album. This is going to be interesting. But to follow up a record with an explanation, you know, to follow up, you know, my biggest album with an explanation, I think would have confused fans. So we got together with Kevin Shirley and we talked about this and we recorded some acoustic material that ended up on the Slow Gin. But we said, like, we should crank up the electrics and just make this a full-on, you know, release. And,
yeah.
And because we knew we had some really good stuff and we had some good stuff collected, and we're like going, let's make a record, you know, not having, you know, let's not, you know, stipulate anything and not tie ourselves down to one particular genre or one particular thing, i.e., you know, the acoustic.
Yeah, correct.
So we're just like, let's make a record, you know? So I was like, yeah. So we had the song Slow Gin, which is made like, you know, Kevin Shirley found it. And it was like, to me, it was like ducks in water. It was like, made for me, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. When I looked at the credits and I saw that was written by Mr. Tim Curry, and all I could think of was him playing the concierge in Home Alone 2.
Yeah,
but
you know,
it was
written by, you know, Bob Kamen, Tim Curry, and Michael Kamen, Tim Curry, and Bob Ezrin.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's like, and it was such a wild blues song. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's insane. So we were just, you know, very much, you know, really into it, and we made our own version, and it came out. And the first time we played it live, it immediately became the cornerstone of our, you know, one of the fan favorites. I mean, I knew I had something. I'm like, well, there's something really, you know, special about this song, and
absolutely,
people came with, you know, and the setup for the record couldn't have been better. And then it came out, and it just, you know, it's been great.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing you perform that live up at Penn's Peak. Tell you really have a talent for picking songs to redo and just putting your fingerprints on them so that they seem to take on a whole new life. Take, for example, Jethro Tull's A New Day Yesterday,
yeah.
which for Tull, you know, like back when they first recorded it, that was probably considered a heavy song at the time. But you,
oh, yeah.
Joe Bonamassa, you take this song into the studio and it becomes an all-out blues rocker. Now, a question would be, is there anything in a given song that just reaches out to you and says, I need your touch to make me live again? What is it drives you to, you know, like, take these songs and just make them not so much your own, but a part of you?
I think, you know, it's I have no adherence to tradition or anything sacred. You know what I'm saying?
And that,
like,
can be a good thing.
It's a good thing for me. It's when I, like a New Day Yesterday, my A&R guy at Epic, you know, suggested I do that. And I just heard it as a 2-4 blues. And I was like, well, I'm never going to beat the original version, so why try to make a carbon copy of the original version?
Uh-huh.
You don't have to, you know? So it's like, if you're going to do a cover or pick a song like a Slow Gin or A New Day Yesterday or, you know, Had to Cry Today, you know, you don't want to ever get to the point where it's like, well, yeah, it's, you know, it's not as good as the original. It's like, of course you're never going to beat the original. It's the original artist. And we can do is make it different and make it strong. And I look for songs that are really great songs that are not played on the radio. You'll never see me doing Stairway to Heaven. Or,
that's a good thing.
You know, you know,
Smoke on the Water.
Exactly. You know, well-run, you know, classic, you know, iconic tunes. You don't need to do that, you know, but there's a lot of cool B-sides that were just as good, but they just didn't become hits, and maybe they didn't have the definitive version recorded. And you try, and you look, we did one of these days after, and it was the same kind of thing. I was like, this could be a really big number for me. Just kind of tweak a little bit here. And then, you know, to me, like, I the blues purists come after me for this, but, you know, like we did High Water Everywhere from Charlie Patton.
Yeah.
That song, High Water Everywhere, Part 1 and Part 2. So I decided to take the lyrics from Part 1, half the lyrics from Part 1, half the lyrics from Part 2, and write my own verse. You know, and it's like, I have adhered to tradition. I love Charlie Patton, but I'm sure he doesn't mind, you know, or he wouldn't mind if he was live today.
Yes.
You know, and like, you know, that's the whole thing about making that song. Make it your own. Make it a song, you know, try to kind of get into this thing and make it your own. So
uh-huh.
That's kind of like been my whole thing. It's worked out because not a lot of people, you know, it's like, you know, you could open yourself up for criticism if you do it otherwise.
Uh-huh.
I hear fans doing covers, blues bands and whoever, of just verbatim songs, and it's just that dude's or woman's voice singing for a music band that they bought the Hal Leonard, you know, tablature, and they just, you know, recorded it again. It just doesn't make any sense.
Uh-huh. Now, On one of these days, I noticed in the credits, you know, like you have yourself listed and Alvin Lee. Was Alvin involved in the remake at all?
No, no, because basically I took my song that I had wrote. I had this music bed that I had laying around for a long time, and I just basically put Alvin's lyrics and
okay.
a few of his lines on it. And it's like, again, it's like no adherence to tradition, you know. And I'm sure some people will be like, oh wow, that's really, you know, not, you know, that's strange to do. But to me, it's like, you know, I had this song, and then I liked Alvin's lyrics and his melody, so I'm like, well, let's do a mashup, you know.
Yeah. Well, it came out very well. I think it's one of the strong
Thanks.
Songs on your album, and I really, really like it. Let's
Thanks.
See. What else here? Yes, your website, jbonamassa.com. Every Friday mm-hmm. for the last several weeks, you've been releasing a new video from the North Sea Jazz Festival. I'll
yeah.
tell you, those videos have been really outstanding, and I'll tell you what, you must really be proud of the band you've assembled for this tour. They just seem yeah. like they are just tearing things up for you.
Oh, they're beautiful, and it's like, it's a great bunch of guys, and a great, you know, great crew we're out here, you know, it's like it's a bigger thing now, and it's like there's just many people on the, you know, crew, the traveling crew that helps, you know, set everything up and run the whole show, and it's in the band, actually, one more.
Yeah.
So, to me, it's like, you know, we've had such a great unit out here, it's, you know, to go out for 75 and still get along after the third week is a miracle. And we're, you know, even on the days off, we all still hang out on the bus with each other. And, you know, it's a good vibe. You know, it's by handpicking people that are talented, but also good hangs and just good people in general. And that's, you know, kind of what I've done.
Yeah.
And they're just A-level musicians, which is, you know, helps too.
Oh, yes, that always helps. Hey, I'd like to change the subject for a minute and talk about your involvement in the BITS or the Blues in the Schools
mm-hmm.
project. I'd imagine that teenager walking into a schoolroom and seeing your equipment sitting there must be scratching their head thinking, what's coming next? You know,
no,
it must create quite a buzz.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we don't set up the whole band in the school.
Oh, no, you know, no, I understand. That's you yourself, correct?
Yeah, I go there with my acoustic guitar, and, you know, it's I just talk to them a little bit about the blues. I talk to them a little bit about, you know, a little bit about, you know, just roots rock, you know, cause, hey kids, you like Led Zeppelin? Sure, everybody likes Led Zeppelin. So if you've heard Led Zeppelin, then you've heard the blues. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think they've all heard the blues, they just don't know it, you know?
Yeah.
And I just talk to them a little bit about, you know, it's like for a living, and sometimes we do them in an auditorium, and then sometimes we do them in colleges with special classes, and I give lectures and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, my biggest thing that I do to all the kids is like, listen, you know, if you're getting into the music because you know, you just want to go out and party and have fun, I said, you can absolutely enroll into a college and have more of that if you join a, you know, fraternity.
Yeah.
You know, I said, this is a job, and you have to treat it as a job, because if you don't, you know, we talked about this before. So it's like, you know, I think in some cases it's sobering for them to see, you know, somebody who's 30 years old who's been doing it longer than they've been alive, professionally going, you know, here's how it works, and here's how you could really be successful if you really put your mind to it. And it takes an enormous amount, you know, an extraordinary amount of work to do it. And once you get there, it takes an extraordinary, you know, amount of work to maintain it.
Yes,
so,
practice makes perfect, doesn't it, Joe?
Practice makes perfect. And it's like, never get satisfied with where you're at. You never rest on your laurels. But if you choose said path and you work hard enough and you put your mind to it and it's manifest destiny, then you'll be thanking yourself 20 years from now. So
sure.
that's what I talked to him about.
Ah, well, you know, congratulations on taking your music into the schools and showing these kids, you know, like, hey, with a little bit of work and heart and drive, you can be successful in this country and nobody's going to hold you back.
Exactly. It's the American dream, isn't it?
True.
You know?
Now, I see a lot of American artists are frequently touring Europe. I know you've been overseas quite a few times. As a matter of fact, a gentleman who does a show for the station, well, he also opened up for you recently, Mr. Todd Wolf.
Oh, yeah, no, Todd, yes.
Yes, yes.
Todd's great.
Yes,
he is. And he's a nice man, too. He's, like, he's got one more show with us in Providence. I was sick and had to cancel, and we're making up the date in, I think, a week or two. Or
yes, I know. He speaks very highly of you.
Awesome.
Yes, he's done numerous European tours, and I don't know, what is it about Europe that makes it so attractive to the American artist? Is it, you know, like the closeness of all the clubs and stuff that you can play around there, or
Well, I mean, it's It's more so than, you know, I think Europe, I mean, for blues guys, it's almost like the last place they can go, you know. I've been lucky enough to have a few, you know, to be in a slightly different than just a straight-up blues act, mm-hmm. where, you know, I draw from a different fan bases. You know, I draw a little bit from, you know, jam bands. I draw a little bit from, you know, singer-songwriter. You know, you get some girls at the show, thank God. And then you get some guitar here. You know, you get the guys who just want to hear you play guitar all night and don't care what style, or, you know, they're the Guitar Hero guys, you know. And then you get the blues fans, you know.
Yeah.
And you put all four of those elements together, and you got 1,000 people in a room, you know, in America, and you have, you know, 1,000 people, if not more, in Europe. You know, and I think a lot of blues acts go over there because blues is still more relevant over there than it is in America, sadly enough. But
yeah.
I think the blues acts have to kind of, you know, get themselves in a mindset of going, we have to start thinking more progressively about the music that we're playing.
Yeah.
People in the entertainment business, people didn't stop, you know. All the people that used to come to blues shows, you know, didn't disappear. You know, they just stopped coming to blues shows because maybe they weren't entertained, maybe they were just tired of it, and maybe they've seen the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, unfortunately, they go to Europe and they do that, and it's there's a little more tolerance for that. But it's one of those things where, you know, you want to be able to, you know, your goal as a musician is to entertain as many people as possible. And I tell people, I'm not in the, like, you being in the blues is like a waiting room right there. That's a predicating that on something that's incorrect. And I say, I'm in the entertainment business. I'm not in the blues business. I'm not
correct.
In the rock business. I'm not in the guitar business. I'm not in the used car business.
Yes.
I'm in the entertainment business. And my job tonight at the Coalition Ballroom here in Wichita, Kansas, in front of, you know, 800 or 1,000 people, is to entertain them for 9 minutes and make them forget their problems in life and make them forget, you know, that they, you know, need gas in the car on the way home.
As Billy Joel used to sing, to forget about life for a while.
Forget about my for, you know, for the small fee of $27.50 tonight.
No, that's a bargain.
That's my goal is to basically take them and make them forget everything except for the thing on stage for an hour.
Now, I
so
read
that's the thing about the Europe thing. Sir.
Yeah, I read in your press packet you were pretty happy that you didn't get lumped in the same group with two other young guitar slingers, Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Johnny Lang, when they were first breaking out. There was they were all over the covers of the Guitar Player and blues magazines. Mm-hmm. Do you think that put a lot of unrealistic pressure on those two at such a very young age?
Well, you know, again, it's like, for me, it's, you know, I can't speak for Kenny or Johnny, who both of them I know and, you know, are friends of mine, and I respect immensely for what they've been able to achieve and how good musicians they really are.
Absolutely.
And again, it's like, when you have that whole machine working for you, there's you know, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh, and, you know, what goes up must come down, or at least come back down to reality.
Uh-huh.
And I think in both cases with Kenny and Johnny, it was a situation where it's like, you know, radio was really on their side for a long time.
Yes, it was.
And then every single they put out, they got played on major rock stations, you know, big stations, you know, taste-making situations where, like, you know, you're going to XRT in Chicago and all of a sudden you sell 40,000 units in Chicago alone.
Yeah.
You know, and then when radio moved on and started playing Nickelback, you know, then they didn't play, like, the bluesier artists like Kenny, Johnny, and then there was even Indigenous got some, you know, radio play, too.
Yeah, it seems like it goes in a cycle.
And it's just cyclic. And I think, you know, again, it's like life is peaks and valleys, and they just happen to, you know, now I think they're settling into their core, solidify their core audience, and are just making records, rightfully so, to both expand their audience in an organic way, not having to predicate anything on a hit single, and, you know, kind of, like, you know, summing up their core audience and going, hey, this is, you know, this is who I am, this is who has always been, and we're going to build fans the old-fashioned way, and I think it's a good thing. So.
Now, both those guys, along with yourself, you played at Bethlehem's Music Fest, and you were all quite well-received. And, this past summer, one of my favorite artists, Mr. Walter Trout, played down there in a rainstorm. Oh, yes, he is. Walter Trout, I've spent many, I shouldn't say hours, but the minutes that were available after his shows just talking with him. And He is just one great guitar player. And I'll tell you what, after watching your last video, you're playing a guitar solo, and I'm starting to see some mannerisms facially that remind me of Mr. Walter Trout. So, you know.
he's one of my favorite guys. And
I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite people in the world, too. It's like, I played on his record, his last record.
Yes, I realize that.
And, you know, he's one of those guys, you know, especially in Europe, who basically laid the groundwork for people like me to go over there and be successful and play big rooms, and because he's been doing that for 25 years over there, and he's built single-handedly the blues rock scene in Europe.
Yeah.
And he really is, you know, in Europe, you have to, you know, put a couple people in the, you got to put Gary Moore, you got to put Rory Gallagher, you know, lift Rory Gallagher,
yes.
And you got to put, you know, Walter Trout, single-handedly building, you know, the circuit in which I travel.
Yeah.
So, I have the utmost respect for Walter, and he's one hell of a nice guy. And
yes, he is.
Absolutely, A-level, you know, talent and a legend in this business, at least for me. And, you know, I really can't say enough good things about him.
Well, you know, it warms my heart to hear you talk about Walter Trout that way. I know when I first discovered him, and looking online, trying to find Walter Trout CDs, and every one that I find has this little tag behind it that starts with an I, import.
Right.
And, right. Well, I didn't let that hold me back. I went out, I have his complete collection, and I enjoy it so much. But anyway,
he's really one of the best at it, and he makes great records every time.
So. Yeah, I know. When he played at Music Fest this year, he was on his feet for about 15 minutes, and he came up to the mic and said, I have to do something that I haven't done since I gave up drinking. I have to sit down before I fall down. He had a very bad inner ear infection, but I'll tell you what, it might have been raining, but I was smiling the whole time, and so was the rest of the crowd. Walter, he just has a way of making that guitar of his smoke.
Yeah, he's great.
Yes, he really is. Great. All right, I'm going to ask you, I guess it could be called a standard question. Yeah, if you could play with one guitarist that's no longer with us, who would that be? And I have a feeling I know who you're going
to
say.
To pick one guitar player who's no longer with us?
Who's no longer with us.
I would have to say Danny Gatton.
Danny Gatton. Now, that really surprises me. It really does.
Well, he was my friend and guitar teacher when I was a little kid.
Oh, my God. And, I did not know that.
Yeah, and I miss him a lot. And he's one of my, you know, favorite people in life and one of my, you know, biggest mentors and biggest influences in me that I've ever had.
Yeah,
and
I have almost his entire collection. I'll tell you what, I really,
he's my guy.
So. Yeah, the sound of a Stratocaster, or not a Stratocaster, but a Telecaster sometimes can get annoying, but he made that sound so sweet.
Yeah, he's, I mean, you know, like him and Roy Buchanan and all those DC guys. Go down there, from upstate New York and hang out with those guys because, you know, that was a cool thing, you know. Taught me a lot about guitar, taught me a lot about music, you know.
I never would
have heard of Louis Armstrong if it wasn't for Danny Gatton. I never would have heard of the Blue Caps and all this music that I now take for granted. But, you know, you take somebody like that to mentor you.
Yeah, Danny Gatton is definitely a very underrated guitar player and artist, and it's, you know, it's just a shame that things went the way they did.
Yes.
So how about a current guitar player? Who would you like to share the stage with and just trade riffs with for, say, like 45 minutes? Mr. Jeff Beck. Ah, yes.
Yeah. He's rocking. He's my favorite now. So.
Well, that's a good thing. I saw on your website, I believe Truth is still your favorite CD, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's the reason why I make the records I make.
Ah.
Yes.
So what are you listening to on tour right now? What's your ear?
I listen to everything. I just bought the New Government Mule record. We watch a lot of DVDs on the bus.
Yeah.
You know, anything from Peter Gabriel to, we just bought the George Harrison tribute concert, which was great, you know, with Ravi Shankar and his daughter and such beautiful Indian music. It was really rocking last night.
Yeah. Yeah, I see.
I have to run. I have a prior engagement in about 35 seconds that's beeping in the other line.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Joe. And, hey, Penn's Peak, people, November 17th. You need to see this man perform live. Mr.
Thank
Joe Bonamassa.
Love the name.
Thank you very much. And I will see you next Saturday, Jim Thorpe, Penn's Peak. People, be there.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. Sorry to run so quick. I had to just, it's 3:30. They're beeping in. So.
That is all right, my friend. You take care now, and you have a great day.
Thanks, man. You too.
Bye-bye now.